there, and welcome to another episode of Horse Sense, a show for you, the thinking horse person. At Horse Sense, we give you practical, relevant, up-to-date, and even inspirational information that's going to enrich your horsing life. If you're a first-time listener, welcome. And if you've been here before, welcome back. It's great to have you. This show is brought to you by the Equine Care Clinic, a clinic dedicated to the care of sick or injured horses when their owners aren't able to. Check out the site at equinecareclinic.com. I'm your host, Amanda Edwards, and this week I'm talking to Michelle Nichols. Michelle's a Victorian agent for Southern Stars Saddlery. A rider and pretty accomplished horsewoman herself, Michelle's got an in-depth knowledge about gear, good effective products, and a fit that makes both the horse and rider happy. And what I love about Michelle is that she really knows her stuff, and it's all about happy horses and healthy, happy riders. Today we're going to talk safety gear for horses and riders, and there's, I think, a lot of information here that's going to both surprise and inform you. So sit back and enjoy the show. Hi Michelle, how are you going today?
I'm very well, thank you, Amanda.
Welcome to Horse Sense, and thank you so much for being on the show. It's a real pleasure to have you.
Thank you very much.
So we're going to be talking today about horse safety gear, both for the horse and rider, with Michelle, because she is, what is your exact role with Southern Stars Saddlery, Michelle?
I suppose I call myself a sales agent or sales executive here in Victoria. I represent Southern Stars Saddlery, certainly on the east coast here in Victoria, and take out my mobile shop to events and expose our products to people out where they're using them.
So tell us a bit about you and how you got to being the Victorian agent for Southern Stars Saddlery.
Okay, I suppose it's a long historical thing in that Southern Stars Saddlery was created by Clayton and Kelvin Fredericks, and our background is eventing, and I'm part of a family, so I grew up in Perth and I learnt to ride on some of the Fredericks' little show ponies, and my auntie Pauline taught me a lot of the basics of what I know about riding, which is Clayton and Kelvin's mum. And I sort of grew up doing pony club and a bit of eventing, and moved to Victoria about 9 years ago. And it was a point in the time when Southern Stars was sort of really getting off their feet, and expanding onto the East Coast was a great opportunity. And while I was over here, we could expand the business out. And since then, it's just grown and grown and grown.
And I remember when you first started back a long time ago, when our kids were pony clubbers together, and the gear, what I loved about your gear was it's always really top quality and very much about fitting the horse and the rider well, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. You know, being that we are producing products that, you know, Clayton was using at Olympic level and, you know, World Cup level, they had to be top quality, you know, from our saddles to our bridle wear, breastplates, girths. And then we've expanded through to, you know, importing products here into Australia that were used on the world, leading world basis. You know, obviously Clayton was exposed to those things, so we got the knowledge of those and brought them in here to Australia, where we could allow Australian riders to access really top quality products that were being used on the international stage.
Yeah, which is really nice. And you do quite a bit of riding yourself with your beautiful spider, and you have your little babies. And
I do. I wish I had more time to ride. Unfortunately, the business is so busy now that I don't get a huge amount of time to ride as much as I'd like to, and being able to compete. But I certainly do ride for pleasure, and I've done a bit of breeding, and I love my Andalusian horse. You know, always sort of had a passion for the beautiful Andalusians, so I breed sport horses from them.
Yeah, And what did I see you doing the other day? You were in it somewhere carrying a flag.
Yes, I've just started doing working equitation, which is a relatively new sport here to Australia that's growing really fast.
It's really fun, isn't it?
It is amazing. It's a lot of fun, and particularly for smart horses, it's a really good all-round kind of sport. You do your dressage phase, and then you have an obstacle phase, which is a bit like handy pony at Pony Club. And it is good fun, really good fun, and a good training, you know, for your horses as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's really good. So, okay, so today we're going to talk about some safety gear, and I heard you give this talk quite a few years ago to some Pony Club kids, and I thought, you know, it's a topic we don't actually think about too much. We go out, we buy a helmet, we chuck on some boots, then there's a whole lot of stuff for the horse that lots of people don't even know what it's for and why you use it. So I thought today maybe we should start with the trusty helmet.
Absolutely. And as I'm sure everyone's sort of aware, whenever you are certainly riding, and even when you're handling young horses or stallions and colts and things like that, that you're in a bit of, you know, a higher level of danger, you need to wear a helmet. It's, you know, particularly important. There's been obviously a lot of news coverage recently of a very few unfortunate deaths from accidents. So it is important to wear a good quality helmet and a helmet that meets the standards that are recognised. I suppose it's also important that recently Equestrian Australia, Pony Club Australia have changed their ratings that are being accepted at competition, which begins the 1st of January 2017.
All right. So they did that a while ago and we had to all buy new helmets. Do we have to do that again?
Well, it has been on the cards, certainly in Europe. They changed at the end of last year, so they were already in that new standard period. Here in Australia, sort of a year behind. So, yes, a lot of people have been out there, but I suppose the easiest way, rather than going into the technical information, which is quite technical, of the actual standards, certainly jump, if you're planning to compete, jump on the appropriate websites and check the standards, check your helmets. But it's always been common knowledge also, you know, manufacturer recommendations of how often you should replace your helmet. Certainly if you have a fall, any fall where your head contacts the ground, even if you don't think it's that bad, you need to replace your helmet. But also if you don't have a fall, just wearing it every day, out and about, it's recommended by the manufacturers every 4 to 5 years to replace your helmet, even if it's had no impact at all. And this is because the foam here, particularly here in Australia, because of our weather conditions, the foam just naturally deteriorates. It's inside, and that's foam that's what's giving you the protection. So even if it looks fantastic from the outside, feels great on your head, all wonderful, if you do have a fall in that and the foam has deteriorated, that foam won't absorb the concussion and you won't be protected as much as you think you should be. So it is important, and do not sell old helmets. You know, it's sad, but you need to throw them in the bin, purchase a new one.
And the other side to that is don't buy secondhand helmets, so they're not that expensive. You should go out and get them. Now, the interesting thing about that is people will often say, "Oh, it wasn't much of a fall, and there's no damage to the helmet." But as you're saying, it's the inside of the helmet.
Absolutely, absolutely. You can't see the foam that's on the inside of you unless you actually fully take your helmet apart, which is obviously you can't really do because you destroy the helmet. You can't see the impact of compression of that foam that's inside, or even cracks that occur. Yeah. And, you know, that's sort of been evident. There's been some recent falls at high-level eventing where riders have come off and had significant damage to their helmets, but the helmets look perfectly fine from the outside and even from looking on them from the inside. Until you actually take them apart, you can't see the damage that's actually been done.
Yeah, so that's a really good point, and I'm glad that you've covered that off really nicely. And so the new helmets, I think the main feature is more around more foam and a different type of foam. Is that the case?
Yes, basically. Basically, it's the level of the testing that they go to that the
right.
standards
okay.
are. Yeah. Yeah. So, and that obviously means higher anvil testing is one of the things that they do. Anvil testing, drop testing, and compression testing is you need a thicker foam to absorb those higher weights and higher distances that they're impacting those foams at. So, yes, sometimes it does mean a bulkier helmet on your head, but hey, I'd prefer to look a bit silly maybe sometimes than not to be here.
I did work with a neurosurgeon once who used to make his children wear bicycle helmets in the car for that reason.
Okay, that's a bit extreme.
I did think those poor children, they probably felt very like, imagine turning up to school like that.
Yes, I was riding my bike.
Exactly. Oh, forgot to take that off. But for that reason, because he was very, you know, he was inside people's brains. He literally was a brain surgeon. And he used to say, well, the concussion injuries are amazing. You know, you've got to really protect your head. So I know that there's people that have still got a choice and all that sort of stuff, but I just think it's a no-brainer, shall we say?
Oh, absolutely. And on that note, a lot of people aren't aware, because it's not enforced here in Australia, is if you do plan to do cross-country riding or even trail riding, where you are travelling at speeds, you need to wear a helmet that does not have a peak on it. Because it's been proven, research has proven that if you have a peak, that amplifies the stress and pressures across the frontal lobe and can also cause neck injuries, because it's pushing the head back as well. Yeah, so it's really important. Certainly, if you're riding in the UK Pony Club or, BE eventing, it is mandatory over there that you do not wear a peak, such as like the jockeys. They don't wear peaks on their helmets. So.
No, and I noticed the endurance riders don't either.
Yes, yeah.
So when I look at those guys. So, oh, that's really interesting, Michelle. That's great. So we covered off helmets. Now let's move down the chest to the vests. So these have come a long way since the early days, haven't they?
Oh, certainly. Back in the old days where no one would wear them because they were horrible. They didn't move, they constricted your riding, and they were hot and horrible like that. So there's two levels of protection that you can actually give your torso or body protective. There's your basic foam body protectors, which a lot of people do wear, and certainly if you're riding cross-country competitively at EA level, and it should be at Pony Club level and Adult Riding Club, is it mandatory you wear a body protector. So that's a foam body protector that covers your rib cage and as much of your spine as it can be covered without impeding your riding. There's different levels of body protectors available. I suppose the standard that we follow is the BETA standard, which is the British Equestrian Trade Association, which is a testing association that has certain levels. And a lot of people may hear of BETA 1 or BETA 3. BETA 3 is the only level that is considered to be safe for general riding. So the BETA level 1 jackets that are out there, or here in Australia there's a SATRA rating jacket. The level 1 ones are jockey rated, and they are thinner, they are lighter, and they do not offer enough protection for general riding, let alone jumping or anything like that.
So how come they get accepted for the racing, which is going at the fastest speed and...
I know, it is crazy, because the jockeys have accepted that risk.
Right, okay.
And they need a product that is light and because of racing. So
because they're all pretty little too, so their impact is a lot less. They only weigh about 45, 50 kilos wrung out.
Yes, yeah. Unfortunately, the horses, if the horses land on them, aren't so little.
No, no.
So, yes, they do have, you know, less protection that they're... But that's a compromise that the jockey associations have made for their riders, on their riders' behalf. So, certainly here in Australia, I personally, we, as a company, we do not sell anything under beta level 3. And beta level 3 traditionally has always been bulky and heavy and hard and, I suppose, what a lot of people call, you know, turtleback kind of vest. But there are, with technology and new foams being produced, there are a lot of vests out there that are extremely comfortable that are rated beta level 3.
And so do you find the ones with the, like my vest has a lot of little cells, so they bend around you. They tend to be a bit better. I had, in the early days, I had one and I swear it kept, I never fell off. And then all of a sudden I started falling off because as I was jumping, if I didn't sit right, it would pop me off on the landing.
Well, absolutely. If you're wearing a vest, particularly one that's a solid sheet design, if it's not fitted correctly and it doesn't mold to your body, it will impede your riding. It will impede your balance and it won't help things. So, yes, there are, with technology, a lot of the, to get the beta level 3, they've put lots of thin sheets together to create the thickness that you need. And those sheets then mould and bend a lot better. And then there's the, obviously, the block, cell block design as well. It is... important that they meet the beta level 3 rating, and they actually have the purple label if you are looking for a beta level 3 product on it. There are a
few
out there
that are managed to know, because a lot of people will go for the cheaper price, and of course they're not really understanding what's going into the cheaper price or the higher price and why they're doing it. And particularly when they're buying for their kids, I like, you know, it's really important to protect those bodies for those little kids.
Absolutely, absolutely. And price is actually not always a good indicator of the actual standard. You know, we sell a product that is beta level 3 that's hundreds of dollars cheaper than beta level 1 or saturated or unrated products
right. That
are available on the market. Yeah, price is not always an indicator that it is an indication of the thick, you know, the design or the level of protection that you do get.
Now, I'm going to ask you about the, you know, the gold standard 0.2 vests. Do you want to talk about these are the air cushion vests that when you hit the dirt they blow up and like an airbag, yeah?
Well, hopefully before you hit the dirt, they blow up like an airbag.
Well, yeah, that's probably a good idea.
So, yeah, that's the next level of protection. And for a lot of people, it's actually, you know, if you're not cross-country riding, so you're not riding at speed and over a fixed jump, you can ride these air jackets actually provide better protection than a foam body protected would provide you, mainly for the fact that once inflated they cover the full length of the spine, but more importantly they actually provide concussion protection, whereas foam body protectors don't absorb much concussion. They don't really stop your internal organs from banging around inside your body or from an impacted weight on top of you, that concussion being absorbed, whereas compressed air will. So as been found out by airbags in cars and things like that. So it distributes the weight that's in, you know, and the pressures that are being enforced in high-speed impacts.
So how did they work? And you were telling me before that what's the background around the 0.2 name? Because I called it 2-point and you said, no, it's 0.2.
A lot of people do think it's 2-point because they think related to jumping that you're in a 2-point position, and that's why they're called the 2-point air jacket. But they're actually called 0.2 because when they first originally came onto the market, the airbag, the trigger system would inflate in 0.2 of a second. Since then, you know, sort of we're 10 years, roughly 10 years on, the trigger systems have been improved and we're actually down to less than 0.1 of a second. So it is incredibly fast.
So does it sense you tilting? Is that what happens?
No.
Or?
No, yep. So when you get your jacket, you actually get a strap that you attach to your saddle, a bit like a monkey strap kind of thing, yep. And it's attached on your, you know, through your D's and over your stirrup bars. So your stirrup bars are the most secure part of your saddle. So they're attached to that, so it's a very secure, firm anchorage point. And when you jump in your saddle, you clip on a bit like a seatbelt, click, clack, front and back. Clip on with your lanyard at the front of the jacket that's attached to the trigger system, and that's sort of just, you know, you don't even notice it's there while you're riding along. But when you leave the saddle at a certain distance, the lanyard would pull out a stopper on the front of the jacket that would release the spring that then would inflate the jacket at a very, very high speed.
Yes. That is so clever.
So it's the strap is designed, or the lanyard length is designed so that if you get left behind or you find yourself on the neck of the horse or on the bottom, you're behind the saddle horse, but you can still make it back into the saddle, it won't go off. But once you're at a certain distance, it will be inflated in time before you hit the dirt. And even if you find
that... point of no return.
Absolutely, absolutely. Bang, off it goes. So, and even if you find that the horse is falling with you, as long as that jacket, it's roughly worked out to, as long as the trigger system is employed at 20 centimetres from the ground, the air jacket will have inflated by the time you actually hit the ground.
That's really great. Now tell me, if you are an older person with a more fragile body or a child, what is the, you know, like sometimes they say airbags shouldn't be used in cars on kids under 8. Is there the same sort of issue with the 0.2 vest or not?
Okay, so 0.2 have designed a jacket that is available for kids, and it is designed a little bit differently that the outer shell is elasticated so that when the airbags do go off, they go off to the outside rather than impacting on their fragile chest, so their rib cages aren't quite fully formed and things like that. The only restriction that the air jackets do have is there is a minimum weight, and that purely is down to the weight that needs to employ to pull the trigger out of the front of the jacket.
Right, cool. All right, well, that's really good to know, and I think that I have a friend out there, and she'll know who I'm talking about when she listens to this, who I'm absolutely going to recommend gets one of these.
Absolutely. Look, for trail riders, we've sold endless number of jackets to people who are just, you know, rounding up cattle or riding new young horses, and they just wear the air jackets, and the police all wear air jackets Australia-wide. Certainly their new recruits do when they're in training, or they've got new young horses that they're in training, they wear the air jackets to provide better protection than a foam body protector would. And that's obviously on a health and safety basis that they've investigated all those options, and they've deemed that their 0.2 air jackets to be the best on the market for them.
The best thing about it too is that they're light to wear when you're not, like when they're not inflated, they're incredibly light to wear. You'd hardly know you've got them on.
Absolutely. And quite often you do forget that you've got them on, and some people dismount. Doesn't happen all the time, but if you dismount energetically, the air jacket will go off.
That would be me. I would do that.
But, I mean, like me, I've gotten off my horse, you know, quite a few times and forgotten to undo. But being that my horse is quite massive and I'm a bit older, I slide off. And there's not enough weight or speed to deploy the jacket. So you're very quickly halfway down go, oh, I forgot to undo. So you sort of reach up and try and undo before the horse steps away and then it goes off.
Yeah, so I really think I'd like to encourage people. And the other thing I think about vests is having a foam vest for, like, I deal with a lot of sick or injured horses, and often they are... distressed and not themselves, and they're more likely to do something that's going to injure me. So I'm trying to get into the habit now of wearing a vest every time I'm handling those horses and getting Ebony to do the same. So just because they can, or a young horse or whatever, they can sometimes do things. And I think there was the most recent accident was a young girl leading a horse into a stable and got kicked.
Yes, yeah.
Which is just, you know, you just think, oh, so unnecessary. But anyway, I mean, accidents do happen. They're big animals, so. You know what I'm noticing too? Yeah, and I also think too there's a bit about concentration. So not being distracted when you're around a horse, because a lot of the serious injuries we're seeing too are around kids that are, you know, still got their phone in their hand. Just paying attention, you know, getting back to paying attention. There's so much distraction now that it's important to pay attention.
Absolutely. And never take anything for granted. Even the quietest horse that's around that you may have handled for years and years, something may distract them. And if you're in the way, unfortunately, they weigh, you know, 500, 600 kilos. And, you know, even as a child, I remember getting knocked over by a horse accidentally, inadvertently. I wasn't wearing a helmet. My head landed on concrete. And the concussion that I got out of that was terrible. And obviously the dirty big black eye I got as well.
I know. And I just had my safest horse the other day do something and inadvertently dump my grandchild. And I was like, oh, you know. Didn't pay attention for that one time and trusted this horse implicitly, and you just can't take those things. I was shortcutting because she was busting to get on a horse. So
yes.
Anyway, you know, never take the shortcuts, which is easy to say, and you know I'm still practicing that message at over 50. So
yeah, and obviously don't go the opposite extreme and be extremely cautious and nervous around horses, because obviously then they feel it as well, and then they're on their toes going, ooh, what's going on?
What's going on? Something scary. All right, so let's go move on to, moving on to safety stirrups. Now, I got on a horse, we're looking at it for somebody, and it was an endurance horse, and she had these lovely endurance stirrups with toe stoppers in them. And it was so comfortable to ride in. I was like, why aren't we all doing this? But let's talk the range of safety stirrups.
Okay, yep. There's a lot of stirrups out there on the market these days, and obviously technology has changed of what stirrups are available. And probably the best thing as far as safety stirrups, we've got the old ones with the elastic on the side that breaks away, obviously, when you fall off to the side. They don't always work in every case.
I don't know if you remember, Ebony, my daughter, came off and busted a couple of vertebrae using those stirrups, because essentially the side of her foot got caught in the little hook down the bottom.
Yes. So, I mean, not all traditional, what we'd call safety stirrups, are actually that safe. And so probably the best thing, the best invention in stirrups over the last, 5-10 years has been the increase in the foot plate area on the bottom of the tread. So the width of that, and then the arch of the actual stirrup to allow your foot to come out. But if you've got a secure foot on your stirrup, and you're not putting your foot all the way through, or a narrow pivot point, such as the old type of very thin stirrups that are available, you've got less chance of actually your toe being caught in that stirrup and your foot, you know, getting caught.
So that's interesting.
And comfortability-wise, and less pressure on people's joints and tendons or ankles and things like that, the wider plate on the bottom of the stirrup is what's really important.
It's hugely comfortable. This particular stirrup was exactly that, wider with a bit of sort of foam, and I thought, yes, I could easily do 20, 40 or whatever. I couldn't do 100Ks, never. But to do 220 on it, and this would be quite comfortable. And I think the other thing is the toe stoppers for children or even riders that are maybe new to riding, just to make sure your toe doesn't go forward into that. They're quite a good feature as well.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So what's a toe stopper? So just explain that for people who are...
Okay, so a toe stopper is essentially like a cage that you can attach. Some stirrups come with them made on them, but other ones you can actually buy as an accessory for your stirrups. So they slide over the stirrup leather at the top and then create a cage at the front of the stirrup so your toe cannot go any further forward of the stirrup point than what is recommended.
Yeah, excellent. All right, so and you've got your sort of breakaway stirrups and so forth, which they seem to work pretty well as well. So a bit more on the expensive side, but certainly quite good. But I like the fact that you've got some basics that might not cost so much.
Absolutely.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. All right, so is there anything else about the human? That seems, I think that's most of them. Is there anything else you can think of for the human, the rider?
Oh, not well, other than, you know, sort of obviously wearing clothing that's correct for what you're doing and wearing boots that are correct, the old standard rules, you know, that apply.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, put yourself in the right place before you you get on a horse so that you're not going to place yourself into a situation that could cause you damage.
Yeah, beautiful. And boots with no skid is what you mean, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
No tread on them. All right, so let's move on to our horses. Some of the safety gear for horses, and particularly for eventing, and I guess that I never really, a lot of us have put different tendon boots on and fetlock boots and bell boots and all these sorts of things and dressage bandages. And I guess if I ask people what they're for, they often go, oh, they look good, or I just should. So I thought we might talk a bit about the why and what makes a good boot for the horse, because those tendons are at risk. They're big tendons, skinny legs, not much meat on them, so they are prone to injury. Talk about that a bit.
Yep. So the tendons, particularly the tendons on the front legs, are exposed to strike. Particularly if you're travelling at speed over uneven ground, there's more chances that the horse is going to get a bit unbalanced and may knock themselves with their own legs, or could knock themselves on something that they're, you know, is in the environment. I suppose if we start at the basics, just everyday riding, or, you know, maybe you're just doing a casual trail ride or something like that, and you do want to give your horse some strike protection, and this, I suppose, encompasses, you know, any time you put something on your horse's legs, you need to think about what impact that's going to make, particularly on the heat side of things. So there's a lot of boots that have traditionally been made out there, you know, for cost factor and ease of care factor, that are neoprene based. And that is potentially the worst thing that you could put on a horse's leg. And if you think about it, neoprene is designed for wetsuits. And what is
to keep us warm.
Correct. It's for surfers and divers and things like that to stay warm. And it's really not the best thing to put on a horse's legs because, yes, it does increase the heat around the tendons, and extra heat on the tendons causes more damage to those tendons. So sometimes it's actually better to wear nothing. But if you want strike protection, you need to find a boot or a coverage of that area that is not going to increase the heat. And there's lots of new products and new foams out there, new materials that are used that can wick away sweat. So the more you take that sweat away, the area has a chance to cool and airflow go around it. So the horses sweat for a reason, and that is to cool that area off with wind and things like that. So sometimes foam bandages and the old traditional dressage bandage that a lot of horses wear, they can get extremely hot.
Yeah, and the problem with getting hot tendons is that then if they do get hit, they're actually more prone to swelling. They may swell just because they are heated. And it actually constricts then, it gets so swollen that it's constricting the blood flow to the legs, which is putting them at increased risk of strain and sprain and damage.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then the other factor you need to think about when putting boots on your horse's legs is rubs, friction. So it's important to put a pair of boots on that are correctly fitted. Don't buy something.
How do you fit them?
Okay, so it's a matter of doing correct measurements. They need to be firmly put on the horse's legs, but not too firm to constrict blood flow. And then the friction is actually more caused by boots that are too big or have too much movement around, because obviously they're, every time the horse's legs hits the ground or the horse moves, it's going to rub. And that obviously can cause friction rubs and issues and things like that. There are quite a few boots on the market that have a solid strike protection area that quite often can be shaped to the shape of an average horse's tendon. These sometimes aren't always a good thing, because not every horse, as we all know, is exactly standard. So a boot that is flexible and molds and self-adjusts and can be done up, you know, relatively firmly so we don't get movement, fits well, washes well. You obviously don't want something that's going to keep dirt or...
Yeah, because that'll cause friction as well.
As well, yeah. A lot of people put sheepskin-lined boots on their horse's legs and, yes, it breathes well and doesn't get overly hot, but unfortunately sheep, like the actual wool, will hold sand and grease and dirt and mud.
Yep.
And if they get wet, then they get extremely heavy as well.
Some of the more hybrid fibres around that are quite light and easy to clean, so they're quite good.
Yes, there's nothing wrong with synthetic fibres on a horse's legs for the short time that we put on them. And the beauty is that they do breathe, and the technology that's been employed in Coolmax materials and wickable sweat, you know, wicking materials is amazing.
Yeah, exactly. And that nice seal, what they put that lining stuff in it, the Coolmax, it actually is highly breathable and very, that's what the triathletes wear and all that sort of stuff. So
absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And the, you know, the invention of memory foams, and particularly memory foams that are constructed with airflow, so with holes in them that can allow for the air to flow through. And traditionally memory foams, a lot of memory foams used, are coated so that they don't absorb water or sweat as well.
Beautiful. Now, I just want to talk about actually putting them on, because I've done a lot of gear checking over the time, and I reckon about half the time the front boots were put so that they weren't covering the tendon at all, and they were covering either the side of the leg or the front of the leg. So just talk about where they should, how the front and the back boots should be applied.
Okay, yep. I suppose you've got to think about where a horse is going to strike their leg. And a lot of people have the misconception, particularly for cross-country riding, I've got to protect the front of the leg, because if they hit a jump, that's what they're going to hurt. But actually, you potentially want your horse to hit a solid fence with the front of their leg and be able to feel it, because otherwise next time they jump another one, they may go, oh, yeah, I can just hit this fence and it's not going to hurt. So the biggest danger to a horse's legs, particularly cross-country riding, is actually from the inside and the hind hitting the back, the precious tendons on the back of the legs or the front legs. And I've seen video footage and you know, photographs of horses that have run cross country and they've had a boot on with a certain strike protection on the back of the tendon. The horse has struck it with its hind leg and pierced that solid material. And the boot has held it all together, but when they've gone and taken off their boot, the horse has also struck a vein, and that horse has passed away because obviously it's bled out. So it is really important to have good quality strike material, particularly in cross-country boots, on the back of the leg and the in, and certainly to the inside of the leg. Front of the leg, you can put a little bit of foam or something, but you still really want the front of that cannon, which is purely bone and a bit of skin, to be able to feel the jumps. And that's why in show jumping, and in show jumping, that's why they wear open-fronted boots, so that the horse does, if it does wrap a rail, it will feel it, but then you're protecting the inside and the back of the legs, which is where they're going to get a strike.
So what about the hind legs?
Okay, so the hind legs are exactly the opposite. You know, if anything, they'll have a front leg that, you know, the shoe or the point of the toe of the front leg hitting the front of the cannon, and or the inside, so the opposite leg hitting the inside of the bone. So, yeah, so on a cross-country boot, generally you would have protection on the front of the cannon and the inside of the leg, yeah.
And bell boots, yes or no?
Bell boots are fantastic for horses that may be slightly long in the toe or have a very athletic figure and over track, and it stops them, you know, striking their
shoulder. Oh, bulb. Yeah.
Absolutely. Sometimes that can impede some horses. You know, certainly you don't see show jumpers wearing bell boots because they will impede and also potentially could hit a rail if you get ever so close to a rail. At certain heights. Dressage, yeah, if you're riding a young horse that's a bit unbalanced, or even an older horse that you're doing a lot of lateral work with, potentially where one hoof could get the other hoof, then, yeah, bell boots certainly are a great form of protection. But once again, it's important that they fit well and that they don't cause rubs or issues or anything like that.
What was I thinking then? Oh, yeah, particularly for horses that are shod and who the eventers that are putting stops in there.
Okay, yeah.
I've forgotten the right word.
Bell boots can be fantastic when applied with studs, but
that's the word I was looking for.
They can also be actually quite detrimental, particularly looking back at London Olympics and Clayton Frederick's fall at the London Olympics. He, being the last Australian rider to go, had a very unfortunate situation in between two jumps where the horse did compress up and the stud of a hind shoe came forward and pierced the bell boot and got stuck in it and dragged the horse down.
Ooh.
So he had a fall in between.
Now, how's that for a freak accident?
Absolutely, absolutely. Clayton was absolutely devastated because they were looking brilliant and it was towards the end of the course as well. So he was, and it was, you know, in between. It wasn't anything other than a pure tragedy of equipment failure.
Yeah, wardrobe failure. Yeah. Ah.
Yes. Yeah. Or the situation, and unfortunately it came down to the way that the, you know, cross-country course was incredibly slippery because of the way it was built on the gardens there. So they were having to put massive big studs in the horse's shoes. And that sort of leads on to putting studs in. There's some safety products out there. We sell one particularly that we get in from America called the None Finer Safety Stud Tap. So when you do have studs in your horse's shoes, they've got a obviously a screw-in hole that you need to keep clean, but each time you put a stud in, you need to tap that hole back out so that the stud can go in correctly without cross-threading or anything like that. Traditional old taps would be a T-handle, so a piece of, you know, like a bit like a screwdriver with a handle on the end. And if a horse puts its foot down halfway through tapping out, that actually can be quite dangerous and cause issues to the rider or the horse, or the tap could break off into the shoe, and it can be quite hard. So None Finer have designed a tapping product that's embedded in a rubber heel that you use that, and if the horse stands halfway down, all it's going to do is stand on the rubber plate that the tap is embedded in.
Wow,
so that's
fantastic. That's very
product.
Clever. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So very, very safe. And also studs, I suppose you're looking at for jumping, if you're wearing studs, protecting the belly of the horse. And you'll see a lot of horse jumpers out there wearing stud guards.
Yep, and that's those and big belts under their belly, yeah?
Correct, yeah. So even if your horse doesn't wear studs, even if they're barefoot, if they're jumping and they pick their toes right up and they hit themselves on the belly, it's an incredibly sensitive part of the horse.
Yeah.
And the horse may not, if they hit themselves there and they're not protected by something, they may not next time pick their front legs up quite so fast. And obviously we don't really want that because that could lead to rails or it could lead to a rotational fall where they've left a leg behind.
Right, yeah. Okay, well, that's really cool. Anything else around the horse that you can think of that helps with safety?
Okay, I suppose not to do so much with riding or when we're on the horse, tying your horse up and tying your horse up safely so that they don't injure themselves. Yeah. A product that's out there called Equipings was designed several years ago. I think it was 2011. It won the Equestrian Trade New Product of the Year. And it's a little plastic ring that you can put on and tie your horse up to. And
so I've got a few of those. They're really cool.
Yeah. So if a horse does pull back, they're not going to hurt themselves. They're not going to break your halter or your lead rope or the ring that they're tied to. And it safely breaks away. Unlike baling twine, it's a little bit more reliable because it's set at a particular weight to break away.
Yeah. Okay.
And it can be reused. So it actually stays attached to the lead rope. So someone can rescue the horse, grab the horse and just put them back on and put the equipping back together and they're tied up again.
So, yeah, I really like those. They're great, yep.
Yeah. And they look a lot neater than the old baling twine.
They do. Although 101 ways with baling twine, I reckon I've found 105, but you know.
Oh, baling twine does have its uses.
It does, yes. All right, so anything else that you've got in your little kit bag there that you want to talk about? Or do you reckon we've covered?
I think we've covered everything as far as safety wise. Probably I can, go back to, being that we sell saddles and saddle fit as well, safety is all about putting the right gear on your horse and having it fitting your horse well. So
absolutely. That's a brilliant key message right there.
Yep, absolutely. So, you've always got to think about, is your saddle fitting correctly? Is your bridle fitting correctly? Is the bit the correct bit to put in the horse's mouth? Once you've got your horse dressed in the safest possible way and the most comfortable way, your horse is then going to give you its most and put you in a safe place to ride it. So a lot of people, ride their horses thinking that, oh, it's a very nervous horse, it's a very spooky horse, without thinking that those nerves and spookiness that the horses are showing are actually the horse trying to tell you that they're uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly. And that can be hard to get right. Like, I mean, you think about all the back injuries and muscle soreness that horses get from an ill-fitting saddle. And what I love about the Southern Stars saddles is that really wide channel, so it's not pinching on those nerves. And you fit them really nicely. So it's all kind of that really works, I think. So it's worth that extra effort because you might spend a bit more on a saddle, but you save a lot more on trying to work out where that lameness is coming from and why that horse is trying to kill you and all those sorts of things.
Absolutely.
So I think that's an absolutely key message to take away from this. Thank you, Michelle.
That's really
good. Okay, so I reckon we could call it a wrap there, and I think that's been fantastic. I knew this was going to be a great interview. I've learnt heaps. So I just want to thank you for coming on the show. I know lots of people are going to love it. Where can they find out more about you and your products?
Yes, certainly. They can head to our website, which is obviously www.southernstarssaddlery.com. Or you can just put into your favourite search engine, just Southern Stars with an S on the end, Saddlery. And and you can find the links to us. I certainly am out and about with my mobile shop that I go to, mostly eventing shows. The next one coming, big one coming up, is Melbourne 3-day event in 2 weekends. And, you know, we certainly have our, you know, our wares on show there, and happy to chat to you about any of our products. Alternatively, you can give me a call on 0421 726 557.
There we go.
That's the one. Give me a call. Happy to chat anytime about anything to do with saddlery or safety products or anything like that. So
one of the things that's always been lovely when I did have enough time to go out and do a few comps was catching up with you out there and saying, hey, Michelle, what do you think of this? Or, you know, and that's what I've always loved about you, is that you really will help people get good information. So it's not just, yeah, and this is what I think is your point of difference, is that I never felt like you were selling a product. You were always fitting a horse or rider.
Absolutely. And look, if I haven't got a product that's going to solve a problem or, you know, help someone out, I'm certainly happy to point them in the right direction to give them whatever's the best for the horse and the rider. You know, so we all do this passion for a reason, and certainly I'm not out there about making money. I mean, making money's nice.
Well, you've got to keep yourself fed and
rude. Absolutely. But, you know, for me, it's more what's more important is the, you know, health and happiness of horse and rider.
And that's exactly, you know, so that's what we have on Horse Sense, is all about people that are passionate about what they do and are really focused on that kind of, you know, really good, practical, relevant and up-to-date information. So on that note, I'm going to say that we are wrapping up this interview, but that I will put links to the show notes. I'll put some show notes on the website, and so you can go www.horsesenseshow.com, and we'll have all the links to the Facebook page, the website, all that sort of stuff. So if you can't remember any of that, you can come to ours. And we will also have a lovely picture there of Spider and Michelle, won't you, Michelle? You'll send one of those to me.
I might have to fuzz out my face, but there you go.
No, you will not. No, that's not true. And he's because Michelle's horse is a beautiful big spunk.
He is. Spunk with attitude.
He is, yeah. So that's great, Michelle. So thank you so much for being on the show. And, yeah, get out and check her out. Bye.
Sounds good. Thanks, Amanda.
So, what do you think? Pretty helpful, right? My top three takeaways from today are, drumroll, number one, be alert but not alarmed. Be safety conscious without being fearful. Horses don't like trepidation. They just don't do it. Makes them nervous. Number two, don't just go for the cheapest product or the most expensive product. There's a wide variation in the standards, so you really want to do your research and make sure you've got the right product for what you're trying to achieve. Number three, you pay a lot for your horse, you pay a lot to ride and to keep riding, so don't skimp on your safety gear. They're big animals and, you know, bad things can happen. It really ruins your day. Make sure it fits you and your horse properly. Don't forget, you're worth it. You can find more information about Michelle and get links to her site and her Facebook and all that sort of stuff at Horse Sense Show website in the show notes. So that's www.horsesenseshow.com.au. So what did you find most interesting about that chat? I'd really love it if you left a comment and a review on iTunes or on the show notes at horsesenseshow.com. The reviews on iTunes really help raise the profile of this show, and that helps me bring you more great guests. And on that note, if you want different guests to listen to, I'd love your feedback on that too. So I'm always thinking about what's a great topic to bring you. Don't forget to support the sponsorship of this show by checking out the Equine Care Clinic website at equinecareclinic.com. There's some new first response workshops coming up. Okay, so this is where there's a full day workshop looking at, on how to teaching horse owners how to look after their sick or injured horses. And, you know, it can save you a lot of money in the long run. So that's well worth checking out. We've got one coming up in Reels Creek in Victoria in June. And then we're heading up to Hervey Bay in Townsville in September. You can register your interest on the events page of the website. Or you can just like us on Facebook for more great horse tips too. I just want to say thanks to Angus Strachan for production. He does a really good job at making me sound half decent. And until next time, may your horsing be great horsing. Goodbye.